Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is David Murphy, your host. I also have with us this evening Brother Satavi Jahi, our co-host, and we have a very small crew with us today, and but you know, people probably will be joining on as we move forward. But tonight we want to discuss a few things, what's going on, kind of open mic night, but it's about us helping us. In the last couple of weeks, we have seen how other people help themselves, whether it's positive or negative. They show strength and unity, and because they have resources, you know, they can wield some power. And unfortunately, when people will power like that, usually when it comes to us black melanated people, we kind of at the bottom of the total pole. Everybody can wield their power at us, but it seems like we have no defense system. You know, we have to grin and bear whatever they throw at us. And we get upset, we talk about it, but you know, what we going to do about it? And so with that being said, before we get started, we're going to start with something positive. As always, I'd like to bring on my partner, co-host, longtime friend, Satavi Jahi, who always has something positive to say. Welcome to the call, brother Satavi.
Hey, David. Welcome. Glad to be back here, man. Glad to be on the land of the living. Okay, we open up this call every week with a reading from Daily Motivations for African American Success, written by Mr. Dennis Kimbrough, who's also the author of Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice, a manuscript for changing the curse of generational poverty in our families. The reading for the day goes like this. November 14th, Holy Water. It is not so much what we know as how well we use what we know. Ernesto Procope, CEO of E.J. Bowman Company. One of the greatest circulation systems ever designed is the natural recycling process of water. There is no new water on the planet. All there ever was is still here, only recycled. It goes through various stages, of course. It evaporates, clouds become saturated, and rain falls. The water you bathe with in tonight could be the water that filled the tub of Martin Luther King Jr. The water you used to wash your car with last week may contain the very same water you drank as a baby. And the next bit of water you use may be mixed with the water to be consumed by those who will follow after us. There is no water shortage as far as the planet is concerned. By storing it and redistributing it efficiently, we disrupt the natural evaporation process, thereby create circumstances that seem to indicate a shortage. But in reality, there's always enough. To open the value of plenty, you can use the same system as the water faucet. To get more water through the faucet, you simply open the valve by turning the handle in the proper direction. You remove the barrier that is stopping the flow. You have all the water you need. The value of plenty in you can be turned on by turning your thoughts in the proper direction, thereby removing the barriers that are stopping the flow. All the abundance you need is already there for us. Choose your direction. Today I will open the faucet of abundance. As I read into the night, you know, we need to make sure we open those faucets of abundance in our life so that we don't carry that abundance to the graveyard with us. So back to you, David.
All right, thank you. And again, I want to extend my condolences to you for the passing of your father. And as I always say to people, you know, the baton has been passed, you know, and now, you know, we have to carry the baton and keep it moving, you know. And that movie, I forgot the name of it, was called. But he said, in this little clip in this movie, he said, it took all my ancestors just to make me. And so, you know, a lot of people, just like you were talking about that recycled water, you recycle man, because everything goes back to dust, back to energy, and come out in different forms and everything. So, you know, we just constantly evolve. And sometimes it seems like it can be grossed out sometimes, but that's the cycle of life. You know, life is going to be, you know, kind of deep, but, you know, it can be so simple. But most of the most simplest things in life confine or confuse a lot of folks. Some people, you know, we sit back sometime and complain about this and complain about that, why this not happen, why people do that to this person. But nevertheless, sometimes you have to look at that man in the mirror. And if you see a problem, maybe, just maybe, it's up to you that could change it or start the ball to change it. And so tonight we're going to have a little discussion about several things. One of the things is helping each other so that we can help ourselves. And as we all know, over the past couple of weeks or month or so, this thing with the Kyrie and Kanye West and the Jewish community, I'm not saying it's community, I don't know who's doing what behind the scenes, but I do know that these two brothers got penalized for what they said out of their mouth. And one of them didn't say anything. He just posted something. And I mean, they came down on this brother, I think, extremely hard. And then everybody gets on the news and media, even us, we talk about, you know, give our opinion, how we felt about whatever happened to them or whatever happened to us. But I find it amazing that we can complain about a lot of stuff, but when it comes down to really start making things happen, and then, you know, it seemed to be a difficult task. Sometimes when we talk about making change, especially I'm talking about for melanated black people, because it bothers me greatly to see some of the simple things in life that kind of keeps us in bondage sometimes. And everybody else realize that we, African American, are a powerful group of people. I told y'all one story one day that about, I think probably about 4 or 5 years ago, a group of Asians came to me. That we want to talk to you because we heard that you, the man, can get some things done. And so they invited me to a meeting. And I took a brother with me because I know it was going to be a group of them, but I didn't want to go there by myself. So I took a brother with me. And they explained to me that they said they did their little checkup on me, my whatever background they could find on me, and say that, you might be the man that can fulfill this mission we great go on. We want to start a black directory. And, of course, my antennas went up immediately. Why would Asians want to do a black directory? And then after they finished their spell, tell me how they were going to back me and support, you know, whatever I need. You know, they would, you know, try to bring it to fruition. But then I asked the question, why do you want to do a black directory? And they went on to explain to me that I know a lot of people don't like using this word, but they say minorities. And they were talking about themselves as well. They said that we, African Americans, had wielded so much power since we've been here. And he said they are the recipients of what we went through, going through the civil rights movement, dog fighting, and all kinds of lynchings and stuff that we had to endure. But they seemed to benefit more than we had from our struggles. And then they went on to explain to me, as far as ethnic groups are concerned, and they explained it about themselves. They said, we are Asians. They had all types of Asians there, some from India, some, you know, they were about 15 of them in there. But they were saying one of their biggest problems is that they don't get along with each other. They don't deal with each other. You say Japanese don't deal with the Chinese, and the Chinese don't deal with the Koreans. The Koreans don't deal with the Vietnamese, and so on and so on. And they say black people are the only people they kind of got it together. And, you know, that was kind of strange to hear that from me. But then when I thought about it, you know, they had a point. And also, I also know this as well, because I've been out here for a long time myself. And I do know a businessman, business organizations. I'm going to have to mute some people because they had a lot of background noise. And
you are muted. You can mute or unmute yourself by pressing star six.
That, you know, I was just saying that we, African Americans, and I noticed something back in the day, and y'all seen when the transition took place, those who are old enough, all of a sudden, you start seeing a lot of Asians moved into our community, not move into them, but set up businesses there. And then, you know, Indians and everything else start setting up shop. And come to find out, they understood about it. They studied us, and they studied our spending habits. And they know, that we have a lot of power when it comes to economics. You know, this is one of the reasons that spearheaded me into business when I read the report about us. This was way back in the 70s or something when I read the Urban League State of the Union, and that report was back then to say we had spent around about $300 billion a year in this country, black people. That was big way back then. And they said that amount of money that we spend, African Americans, equated to the ninth largest country in the world. That's a lot of spending power to be the ninth largest country in the world. But unfortunately, the report went on to say that we are the only people that when we have our funding or our money, it goes right back out to other people. And even up until this day, it's the same situation. Other ethnic groups support themselves up to 17 times the time for their money even leave their community. They take their money and spend on each other first. And we're the only people still in this situation that do that. But in any case, the point I was making is this. Yes, we do have power. And quite frankly, every power only concedes the power. But, you know, other people with their power, what you see what happened to Kanye West and the guy Kyrie. But look, I watched the show early this morning because I saw it on Facebook about Dave Chappelle. He hosted Saturday Night Live. And I saw it in the crowd, so I decided to check the show out, you know, the replay. And his open dialogue was about the same situation. And, of course, you know, he was making jokes of it, but he was also saying way back then when he started out that you had to be extremely careful when you mentioned their name. Can't even joke about it too much because they will come down on you. And see, that's a lot of power. The only reason they can do that because they control this and they control that. And they can pick on who they choose to pick on. Because like Kyrie, for instance, all he did was post about something else. Now, all of a sudden, they say they're trying to go after, you know, Amazon, whoever all these folks is who produce this deep documentaries and stuff. But to come down on a brother like that or just posting some of his opinion or tell somebody to watch something to be penalized like that. And nobody, we talk about it, but nobody, no unions, no nothing, nobody backing this brother up, you know, financially or anything else, you know. So this is the type of power I'm trying to suggest to us. If we, now you're talking about it's going to take a while, you know, but the small group of people on here now, I know we all doing our things and here and there and everywhere, but I do know this. And I see it personally. I'm going to hold this publication up, the National Black Unity News. And this is one of the reasons why we're here this evening, because this is power. See, this publication is by us and it's for us. And people can talk all they want to talk. So I see it firsthand. I know we can come together because we actually are doing it. We are. This publication now is reaching worldwide now. And that's because the people like the people on this call right now and people listening to us had come together, not only to lift each other up, but to share our services with our people and to support this publication. And so, you know, you can't tell, you know, I know y'all have, you know, a lot of people have their issues But like I said, so I have living proof of what we can do when we put with our mind to do something. But in any case, I'm going to open up the mic because there are some people on here that I know are doing some great and wonderful things. And I just like to get, you know how I do, I just like to get people opinions about this. And I see my sister on there, and this sister is a soldier, she's been out here for a long time and been serving for a long time. Sister Eartha Harris, can you unmute yourself if you can? Okay. And this is a sister who has always been on the front lines and doing so many different things. And she's still, even up to this day, it involved in so many networks, uplifting the people socially, financially, in a lot of other ways. And I just want to let her know I appreciate all the services that she provides. Hopefully she can unmute herself and come on and share a few words about some of the things that she's doing. And there's another sister on here. Dr. Nada Ali, can you unmute yourself?
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I hope everyone is.
I can't speak for nobody else, but I'm doing okay.
Awesome to hear.
All right. But look, I want to ask you something because, you know, you're an author and you quite a few other things. You're an herbalist and you do a lot of things. But one of the things you do, you've been trying to unite and working with women in a lot of areas. Can you explain a little bit something? What you do with the women groups and why you do it.
Well, working with women is very important to me, just to help them to realize that they are special and that they have everything that they need within themselves. So I teach the women, because I was abused, there are a lot of women out there in that arena who've, you know, been trodden down, talked about, misjudged, just not treated right, period. So what I do is I go in and do workshops. I teach them about their skin care. I teach them about the wellness, taking care of their bodies, how they can live long, live strong. Abuse is real. Abuse is physically, mm-hmm. mentally, socially. And a lot of women, you know, they hide behind makeup and clothing to fulfill to fulfill inside pain. They cover up the outside and try to make everybody else think that they're fine when on the inside they're really hurting. So since I was, I think, like 23, 24, I started taking women into my home. I started mentoring them. I started counseling them. I was a counselor at my church for over 30-some years, and that was my mission, was to counsel these women, to let them know that inwardly, the outward man perish, but it's the inward man that grows day by day. And to, when you look in the mirror at yourself, don't always look at your appearance, but look within yourself and find the beauty that is within. So that is my mission in life, is to just help women have balance, to let them know that they are beautiful, they are special in God's sight. You know, a lot of us women always try to get, I guess, kudos from other people telling them that they're A, B, C, D. No, you need to look to your creator and let him tell you that you are somebody. He created you in his image and in his likeness. You know, we are beautiful. We are divine. We are little gods down here on this earth. And I just want women to know, you know, not to suffer anymore, to look within, like I said, and realize that you are a queen. You are somebody. You're strong. You have everything that it takes to survive in this life. You know, there's so many hurting women out here. They're hurting children. They're hurting mothers, hurting grandmothers. And I try to tell women, too, don't always, because there's a lot of hurting mother and daughters right now, meaning the mothers and the daughters don't get along. I try to teach those daughters, you need to look back at your mother's pain. Your mother probably went through some things and she didn't even really know how to speak into your life. Sometimes we blame our mothers and our grandmothers for things that, you know, that you go through, when you really should go back down to your generation and see actually what happened. You know, one of my girlfriends said that her mother never told her she loved her, but then she found out that her mother had problems because her mother never put her arms around her and told her how to love. So we just have to learn how to not only just look at yourself, but look at the whole, I guess, the whole man, the whole family. We as black people, need to stick together and recognize that we are nothing without each other. We have to come together. We have to unite. You know, we have to, you know, look to our neighbors, look to the left, look to the right. I never forget when I was growing up and I moved to North Carolina in the apartment complex that I moved in, there was 5 women upstairs and downstairs. We looked out for each other. We took care of each other. We were unified. We supported each other. When one didn't have, the other had, you know, and we don't have that in our community anymore. So I am a community activist. I'm the one who goes out here and say, let's stick together. I know all my neighbors. Some neighbors don't even speak to each other anymore. They don't even know their neighbor's name. I know all my neighbors. You know, me and our neighbors, we get along. So it's all about helping us reaching down and pulling each other up, reaching down, pulling each other up. That's what we should be doing. You know, talking about what's going on when you was talking about what's going on with Kanye West and everything. You know, people, I just feel like people have an opinion and they shouldn't be crucified for their opinions. That's just like with me. Sometimes I speak out, but when I speak out, I feel like I'm speaking truth and people don't always want to know truth. My radio broadcast is Truth Be Told because I believe that people can become free by telling the truth. You know, we can't cover things up and to make people happy. We can't, we as a black people have to realize that we are a mighty people. But they told us for so many years that we was under, you know, under somebody's foot, that we're nothing. But when we are truly the tribe of Judah, we are great people. And I just want to let women, men, boys, and girls know that we are special. Oh my God, when you look in the mirror at yourself, I tell these women, you are so beautiful. And then you are divinely made. You know, you're divinely made by your creator. So I just have I think I just have an urgency in my heart right now when I look at what's going on TV and I see what's going on with all the brokenness with all the women, and even not even the women, just the men, you know, and how the world crucifies us. You know, I don't listen to Farrakhan, but I watch Farrakhan because he was talking about what's going on with Yee and, you know, the basketball players. And he was just saying, as long as we can play ball, as long as we can sing and dance, as long as we can tap dance, as long as we can do this, as long as we can do that, we're special in other people's sight. But we have more to give than that. We have so much more to offer, and that's what I want our people to realize, that we were builders. We were creators. We created this world. We created this world.
That's right. Let me ask you this.
I can go on and on.
I know you can, but let me ask you this, because you hit on something real important. When you were talking about going back from generation to generation, how can you teach love if you've never been loved or if you've been hurt? You know, how can you try to heal somebody and you haven't healed yourself first? Now, I've been lately, when we're talking about help us to help ourselves, and something's been pressing on me, and I'm doing something about it now. And I will be doing a series of documentaries on individuals because I'm going to use me for an example. My father, I knew where he came from. I knew when he was around me, but I don't know anything about, you know, what he did back in the day, how he felt about this or how he felt about that. And then talking about his father, my grandfather, I really had no clue what was going on with him, you know, and because they didn't write books back then, you know, about themselves, or they didn't have the tools that we have today to tell our stories. But I think it's extremely important because that each and every one of us need to share and tell our stories. Because now, see, my grandchildren, I've done documents, I did stories on me and stuff. Now my great children and my children's children can say, now they can look at me because I have things that's online that's viral. And they can say, well, they're going to get a little bit of understanding of who I am, what I do, and why I do it. And, you know, and so because like I said, we have generational curses on us that, you know, if some hurting people hurts people, and it goes on and on until somebody break their chain.
Yeah.
But and if we don't talk about it and we don't share our stories, and we have so much greatness among us. Just look at you, for instance. Mm-hmm. Now you just told all of us that you have been through something. You have been hurt and broken, but somehow, some way, that you came out of that. Now you paying it forward. And see, and these are the type of stories that, see, people that can inspire people, because just like you said, there's a lot of women as well as men that are hurting but don't know how to get out of things. Or maybe you could show they don't have to suffer as long as some of us had to. If we could just share some of the insight that we have had. So, Dr. Ali, I appreciate you. I'm going to try to get as many people as I can, and I want y'all to support her. You can go to the National Black Unity News. You'll find the information in there. And matter of fact, I'm going to let you tell. How can they get in touch with you?
DrNylaAli.com is my author website, and Image Within Ministries at imagewithinministries.com. But the last word that I want to say to everybody on the call tonight is all people are looking for is love. That's it. And it doesn't always have to come from your mother, father, sister, brother, aunt, uncle, cousin. But there is somebody out there that will show you love. A lot of women that I took in, they still in my life today when they was young kids, little boys still in my life today. They was young kids and now they're in their 30s thanking me, crying all the time, thanking me. People just looking for love. And if we just share love with one another, you can just touch somebody. If you see somebody out there in the street and you see them broken, you know, people sometimes judge and condemn. Look at this, look at that. No, you don't know why that person is in the predicament that they're in. But where is the love of the Most High that's inside of you that will reach out and touch?
All right. I appreciate that. And we're going to try to get as many people as we can get it. Brother Satavi.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Brother Satavi, if you can unmute yourself, sir.
You are unmuted.
Come in.
All right. What do you want? What do you need, Dave?
Yes, sir. I want to say, you know, like I was telling you when we open up, that you and I go a long way back. You know, back in the days when you was before you even opened up the rec center, the one of the largest rec centers in Baltimore, and you're dealing with you. But when I first met Brother Satav and his wife Cynthia, they opened their house up and turned half of their house into like a recreation center where they took neighborhood children and taught them dance and history and things like that. And I've been fans of them ever since because they did this from their heart. You know, they were just one people. They went out just to get a paycheck. They did this from, and still to this day, they still serve it in so many capacities. But, you know, when I'm talking about, you know, like I said, a lot of trauma and drama goes on with people when they're very young. And I can attest to that myself. A thing that was said to me that I carried this stuff all the way up into my 60s and stuff like that, you know, because I didn't, back in my time, I didn't have a lot of tools that would assist me. We didn't have black children books and Yes You Can and all that kind of stuff. You know, it was just, you know, you had to suck it up or deal with the best way you had. And your parents, you know, some things you wouldn't tell them and stuff like this. But since you dealt with so many young people back in the day, and they grown and got children of their own and grandparents by now, some of them are. But why? You know, because like I say, I'm looking for solutions. Why did you and your wife reach out to the children in your community back in the day? What was the purpose? You know, how did all that get started?
Well, it got started basically because, you know, we operated under the premise that somebody made it possible for me, so I have to make it possible for someone else. And I think about all of the people that guided me and mentored me, and especially my dad, who taught me how to play tennis and helped me have a significant role at Emerson High School, being the number one tennis player there, and his friends that supported me. And so since people had reached out to make things possible for me, and our whole premise was we need to use the skills and talents that we have to make it possible for the next generation. And so that's why we instill so much in the young people that we dealt with. And some of them, they still reach back to us today and have gone on to do some tremendous things. And so we're proud of them, and we're thankful for the things that they have done and accomplished. But the main thing is because someone made it possible for me, I have to make it possible for them.
And guess what? Remember, you know, Satavi's in North Carolina right now. That's where he resides at now. But he's a native Baltimorean. But he had told me a couple of stories, you know, and I witnessed this not too long ago. So about a couple of years ago, we were at, you know, I'm involved with this group called Black Men Unified Black Men, which we hold breakfasts. And from time to time, we would have guest speakers. And one of these speakers was, I think it was a senator or something like that, you know.
Corey McRae.
And, yeah. And he looked around the room, and he would, you know, give his spiel about, you know, politics and all. But he stopped and mid-book and saw Brother Satavi sitting over there. And he just changed his whole persona and gave Brother Satavi kudos, because he said that when he was coming up on the rough side, and then he was one of those children that came into Satavi's in them life, and they mentored him, they cared for him, they shared with him. And he let everybody in the room know that because of who he is today, Brother Satavi and his wife played a major part in that, because they dropped seeds, and like Dr. Ali said, they showed them children some love. And then one day, Brother Satavi also told me this story. I'm telling you these stories because don't take things for granted. Just sometimes, like Dr. Ali said, sometimes people just need to be loved, just to say hello to somebody, hug somebody sometimes. That can make a world of difference. Brother Satavi said he was walking down the street. Tell me that story when you thought that you were almost ready to get robbed.
Yeah, I was walking down the street, and what happened was I seen this person coming up on me, and they got real close to me, and when they got close to me, you know, they was about to rob me, but the person said, "Oh, my bad, Mr. Jahi, my bad. I thought you were somebody else." So they had a gun. I took a gun from them. I said, "Antonio," I said, "what were you going to do if I had to have been somebody else?" He said, "You would have got stuck up." Said, "I don't want to have to go on and do the do." But he didn't rob me because of the reputation I had in the community. Plus, he had came to my center. And, you know, he was a child that was going through some stuff at times. And he just happened to be out there that night. He was looking to clip somebody. And I was coming down, what street was that? That was coming down Walnut Avenue. And I think I was in the 600 block of Walnut Avenue. And he happened to come up on me, and he, when he recognized it was me, his whole demeanor changed. And it was because we gave him love every day. And when let me ask you this then,
Brother Satavi. You know, at the account, because even though you had the guy, you know, and evidently he remembered some of the things that you told him, but yet he was still out there, you know, get ready to do some damage to somebody. But see, this the point I was trying to make about this story is this. Most people have a conscience. And sometimes, be it, you know, sometimes we do some negative things in life, and, you know, and every choice that we make sometimes has consequences to them. Now, I don't know what this brother was thinking about, but I can imagine what he almost did something to somebody who cared for him. And I know that must have had an impact on him after that moment, because somebody poured into his life. And just at a spare the moment time, he could have took that brother out or took that person out and gave it some great thought. But, you know, I appreciate you, Brother Satavi, because I do know all the work that you have done over the years. And you made great sacrifices even till this day that you have, you know, put in. But in any case, let me move right along, because I'm trying to get to as many people as possible. Dr. Pender, can you unmute yourself, sir? Dr. Pender, if you can hear me.
I'm here. How's everyone doing?
Yes, sir. I'm doing okay. I don't know about everybody else, but I'm doing great. You know, Dr. Pender, I had a conversation earlier today, And Dr. Penn is one of those people who've been around for a long time. And I remember I was talking about doing a documentary, and I think he and I almost had an agreement that we're going to do one on him because this man has such a rich history from the civil rights movement to so many other things that he's involved with. And he's doing some great work now. Dr. Pendleton, can you share just kind of briefly with some of the things that you got going on right now?
Yeah, well, some of the things that we got going on, we're giving God the glory for everything that's happening. Is one of the things, one of the major things that's going on is being involved with the news. Some of the most prolific people in the world in this newspaper, and I draw strength from them at my young age of 38 twice. We're here for no other reason but to glorify God. So what happened, we've been working on, we've been discussing for months on the news and elsewhere about how to get our power back, how that actually most of the time when we are complaining about something, we're complaining about how someone has taken certain things away from you, like lack of appreciation and all these particulars, how society treats you. We deal with a whole array of emotions. And so I looked at this thing, and in my studies, we looked at how to reverse the curse. In other words, how to flip the script on this stuff. It's because we as a people, we've gone through, we're so strong that we wouldn't be here. Nobody else would be here. We have strength that people never thought of. Before you were born, you had put inside of you strength and all these amenities that will blow somebody else's mind. In other words, you're so strong that nobody else in the world could be you. You're made for one specific reason, and that is to glorify God. But we've missed out on something. We've allowed society to make us dependent on it. That is our biggest problem. We're depending on the system itself to support you. We're depending on the system to do everything for you. We're taking everything out of where it's supposed to be. Our forefathers didn't have a third grade education and could make it. They could make it because we're here. They didn't have anything but plows, mules. They did gardens and so on and so forth. They didn't have the best of education, but that was the least of things. They were not educated fools. Right now we got people who have PhDs and got the educated fools because they depend on the system instead of depending on God. These people depended on God, and what little they had, the resources, they did the best they could do and put the rest of it in God's hands. So we came out with a book. It's called Who You Are and Why You're Here. It's due out in the next, in fact, I just got to talk with Amazon. We're putting it in a series, and it's going to be in a Bible in the back as a workshop. And I have a very special lady that's on the news that works with me. She's a genius, actually. And you got a lot of geniuses that work in the news. And we put it together. And we're putting it in the back of a Bible. In fact, we're renaming the Bible. It's going to be called the Owner's Manual. Because in the Owner's Manual, all your solutions to all your problems in life are found right there in the Bible. Nothing. There's nothing that's impossible if you go in your scriptures. And that's what we had to go back to. And I'm not saying it has nothing to do with religion. Don't get me wrong. It has nothing to do with religion. This has nothing. This is about relationship, about spirituality. That's all it is. So until we get back there, of course we're going to have problems. And don't hate on the white folks for what they've done. There's nothing you can do about it. Let it go. We're holding up a whole lot of anger on the inside, and you can't do anything about it. Let God take care of it. Move forward with your life. Allow, you know, like some women have been hurt by men, and they hold it out on other men, and some men have been hurt in childhood and so on and so forth. At some point, we got to allow it to go. Just let it go. And move forward in your life. You go through life crippled, trying to hold on to something and correct something from the past. It'll never happen. So that's why we're writing the book, so that you can heal. In other words, go back to where your power source is, how to reconnect with your spiritual self, with your spiritual father, and gain strength and go forward and set an example for society. We may be the only Bible that some bad people may see, feel, or touch. That's where we're going. Thank you very much.
I appreciate that, sir, and good work. And you and I got a lot of things planned for the future, so you know, get ready. Because a lot of people involved in this publication are so multi-talented, but they have the heart to give and the heart to share. And Mr. Walter Murphy, Dempsey Murphy, can you unmute yourself, sir?
I'm here. I am here.
Yes, sir. Now, look, you know, I know you for a long time. No kidding. And, but you know, you and I talk about a lot of things. But one thing that I know that's always been on your heart, and that's family. You know, and we have large families, you know, from both sides of the track, so to speak. But in our families, we have a lot of people with a lot of issues. Matter of fact, we got issues ourselves, but you know. But a lot of family have issues. And I strongly believe that God put people in your family to prepare you for the world. Because just like you see in your family, some people you have to love from a distance in your own family. And then some people will give you trauma and drama, just like anybody else. And some family will actually hurt you, rob and steal from you. But still, you know, because of the bloodline or the relationship, somehow we tend to love it. And it brings me to the point that what Dr. Pender was saying. Man, we can look at other folks and be angry with them and hate them and this, that. But just think of it like Dr. Pendlewood, I think what he was saying is like we all like a big family. And just like our personal family, some of them you got to love from a distance, but still love is in the mix of it. And so, Mr. Murphy, and I know you have a burden for this. And not only do you have a burden from you, but you find yourself in the position that you are what they may call the patriarch of the family now. And on the male side. And so since we come up through families, what is your take on when it comes to dealing with family, how you deal with family, and how you think it could be better? Because I know you're always thinking about ways how the family can come together and do this and do that. So what's your take on how to deal with family from all parts of the family that, like I say, some from a distance, some from this, but how do you see that?
Well, David, first and foremost, I want to thank everybody for being on this call tonight. I'm looking at this rostrum down here, and it is amazing people on this call. Secondly, I want to, get back on the idea and the concept of what you started this off with about Kanye West and Kyrie Irving. There is a number of things that happens to people, and you have to treat them, like you said, David, like family, you know. And Kanye is Kanye, you know. And if he was my brother, I would have some issues, no question about it. However, because of some of the other things, then you're right when it comes down to expressing oneself, and then there is what you call repercussions. I wrote an article a while back about free speech ain't free, you know, and that's a fact, Jack. You know, you can say certain things and it can cost. There are certain things you can do and certain things you can say has a price to pay. And sometimes it's quite heavy. Sometimes it can even get you incarcerated. But that's not what I'm thinking about right now. What I'm thinking about is as if you were my family. What should I do? How do I handle a Kanye and a Kyrie? You really don't. They are individuals just like you. Who do you think you ought to go around and tell them about what they could and should and cannot do? You go ahead and rob somebody, you hurt somebody, there's a thing called karma, and it's going to come up. So there was this thing that happened some years ago, and it's been in the Bible for years, and I'm not going to fuck this thing, but it was about the idea of forgiveness. Now, there are some challenging people in your family. Don't get it wrong, as you said. If there's some folks, boy, to me, you want to pull your hair out and do some other things. But at the end of the day, here are these folks. These are the same folks that's going to probably make you a lot better. The challenges that they put towards you at difficult times makes you think, makes you feel. And when you do that, guess what happens? A whole new thing, something different comes out of it. But one of the things I want to say about the idea of family, David, as you know, I've grown up and just got old. And once you get old, all of a sudden, you're at the top of the heap, okay? Not because I've got so much money or so much talent or so much brains. I just have to be one of the oldest members, male members in my family on both sides. And when it comes down to lineage, on both sides of my family, there are no male men between me and my great-grandparents. I'm talking about the right. And so I get it as far as that is concerned, but what do you do with that? Who do you go? Who do I think I am going around telling folks what they should do and what they should not do? And so again, you know, there is this thing about, like I said, in the Bible, and it's an amazing concept, and I had issues with it. Growing up the way I grew up, I have a real problem with this statement I'm about to make. There was this thing that was about forgiveness, and I guess I'm not sure who it was, but I know they asked, oh, Jesus Christ, how many times should we forgive this person for what they did? 7 times? And the reply amazed me. And for you already know the answer, you already know the answer. But for those individuals who do not know, it didn't say 7 times. The reply was 7 times 70. And I said to myself, when I first heard that, that ain't happened for me. No way in the world. You got 2 times. One on you and one on me, and then we're done. That's been my attitude, and that's most of your attitude that's on this call. But ladies and gentlemen, there's a thing called tolerance and a thing called forgiveness, and when you forgive, you wind up freeing us. Take my word for it, ladies and gentlemen. It's a powerful thing. And so, you know, you talk about family, baby, you know, yeah, family is a hell of a thing to try to deal with. It's like it's even more of a task than you, as if you was in school or in church or any organization, because there's blood involved, there's money involved, and then there's a whole lot of people that are close to you involved. Big difference. And so just know that when it comes down to relationships, I am nowhere near the best at it. Not even trying, because it's too tasking. You have to be for real and be yourself. And at the end of the day, I know I'm going to be taking up a little bit of time on this. End of the day, ladies and gentlemen, and David, all of you guys know that you're responsible for your reaction. Yeah, you're responsible for your actions, but your reaction. And if you were to take just a little bit of time to think about what's really going on, and you process it within yourself, and if the goal is for you to feel good and not to hurt somebody, brother, you are way ahead of the game. And so I know this sounds kind of like, but at the end of the day, it's about you and how you deal with those difficult folks in your family that makes you the strongest. Back to you, David.
I appreciate that, sir. Man, I do. I appreciate you. And look, I'm trying to get to, like I say, I'm, you know, trying not to hold you, everybody, long. Danielle, can you unmute yourself?
Hello.
How you doing, young lady?
Fine.
All right. But look, let me ask you something. You know, I hope you be direct. Now, I know you're much younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And you gotta, you know, if you are blessed with more time, you know, to get to my age, you know, you have to travel many roads. You're gonna have to, you know, experience many different things. But from where you come from at your age,
mm-hmm.
and the way you see things the way they are now, from your perspective, now I do know you just lost some family members. You know, so you're already experiencing death and loved ones and. And you probably had a lot of personal trauma in your own life and stuff. But mm-hmm. in this world of mass communication, y'all get so much information from here and there, and y'all be feeding it. How do you see, I mean, if you don't have to say anything about it, but I just want to ask you anyway, as a young black woman,
mm-hmm.
how do you view life? Is your optimistic? Do things look good for you, or is it like it's no hope, or you just in survival mode, or how do you view things from where you are right now?
That's a good question. I feel like, you know, there's some hope for like me having, you know, a successful business and things like that, but they do make it harder for us as we gain more knowledge about different things through the internet. You know, they always want to find a way to try to stop us. But also the thing that I feel like that might be, I wouldn't say hold people back, but kind of is unity, like the black people, especially, like, you know, some blacks my age or younger, they just go off of what's trending and they listen to everything else instead of trying to get on, you know, trying to build together. And they just think about just money and things like that. The funny thing is I was listening to this morning on the way to work. I was listening to 106.1 and they asked a question like, far as voting, would our ancestors be happy about the decisions that we are making and how many people as you know, African Americans are voting? Like how, you know, would they view us now? And I think they would be disappointed. Because they, you know, had to do a lot for us to use the vote freely without doing anything extra. And, you know, we don't really vote. It's a lot dealing with the corrupt system that hinders us from doing that as well. So the media has its pros and cons, but if you let it get to you, it could be a con. And I feel like a lot of times millennials let that kind of control the way they think and the way they move as far as business relationships, intimate relationships, family relationships. So, yeah, like that's my input on it.
Well, let me say this to you then. I went to an event Friday night. Mr. Murphy, I think you'd be interested in this. And but she didn't know I was going to be there. It was at the Art Social Club.
Mm-hmm.
And my niece was there. Her name is, she deemed herself as Nia June. She's a poet and a filmmaker. And okay. they showed her film. She didn't know. I saw her name on the thing because, all the brothers sent stuff out to whatever take place at the Art Social Club. So me and my crew, we went there. And she was shocked to see me there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a whole host of people around in your age group was there. A whole bunch of, it was probably about eight of us there, old folks that you may call us, was there. Mm-hmm. And we got to share information with one another, you know. And they had one of the things was honoring their fathers. And my niece was showing a film about pretty much black men. And it was real deep and heavy because, like I said, she's a poet, so she goes a little deep.
Right.
But the thing is, when we had that open conversation, the majority of the young folks there, you know, was not aware of us. I'm talking about the older folks that's doing something in the community. Like you say, everybody was into their own little genre, and they knew of each other. But as far as it went, they didn't have mentors or elders in their lives that can kind of steer their way. They're bumping their heads. And this is where I think that we need to close the gaps because, you know, we need our young people to carry the baton and our young people need us because we have the wisdom and knowledge so they don't have to bump their heads and try to guess their way through life. And I just want to commend you for having enough wisdom and knowledge at your age to get involved with people like us that can help you and you can help us.
Right.
You know, because you and I had a conversation because, like I said, I want to reach massive amount of people. And Danielle has volunteered to help me do that with some of the, you know, social network that I'm not, you know, I know a lot about someone, but I haven't gotten too many of them now, you know, out there. But in any case, I just want to take time, you know, to thank you for your participation in the National Black Unity News and keep coming back because, like I said, there's a lot of people that want to pour into your life and share some of the wisdom and not. And the worst thing that happened to people like me is to pass on without sharing the wisdom and knowledge with our young people.
Right.
And the courtesy thing, too. That's why they say the graveyard is the richest place on earth because so much wisdom and knowledge is buried there. And unfortunately, they didn't reach out and share. So that's why I say it's so important, ladies and gentlemen, to start sharing your story. Even if you can't get to young people sometime, your story can. Once it goes viral, once we put it online and stuff like this, is why it's so important to do these documentaries, to tell your story. Because like people like Danielle, once you get a wind of what you've been through, why you did it, and all this kind of, that would give her hope and inspiration. See, one time myself personally, I had to read autobiographies when I was going through some challenging time when I was young. But it gave me strength to see that these people had to go through way more than what I had to go through. And that gave me some type of soul, some type of peace to, you know, to go through that, well, how we say, them valleys I was in at that time. So it encouraged me. But in any case, I'm going to move on. Brother Carl Tease Ransom, how are you doing, sir? Carl Tease.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Now, here's a young man, another young person, but he has a perspective on a lot of things, especially when it comes to being black. And I'm with you, and he's always open and honest. I ain't even gonna ask him to be that way, but you know, that's the way he is. He comes straight to you. He shoots from both hips. He shoots straight. From your perspective, by being a young black man, how do you see the future as far as being black in this country or throughout the world? How do you see it from your point of view? And if you could, what would you change about it?
Well, first, I want to say something about this whole Kyrie Irving thing and Kanye.
Okay, go ahead.
First of all, Kyrie Irving did not do anything wrong. All he did was share about a movie that he had watched. He didn't put any caption on it or anything. He just shared about it, about that movie from Negro to Hebrew or from Hebrews to Negro, whatever. Mm-hmm. And those European Jewish people jumped all over it and started accusing him of being anti-Semitic, which is a game that they play to shut black people up from telling the truth. And instead of us standing up and being on his side, we sit back and we are quiet. We let these people attack our people and don't speak up. Whereas when something happens with them, they're all over it. Like Michael Jackson, which I learned about 5-10 years ago, when he first recorded that song, They Don't Really Care About Us, he had a lyric in there that said, kike me, which kike is a racial slur towards Jews. It's like their equivalent of the N-word for us. Okay, and when Michael put that word kike in that recording, he was forced to take all those recordings off the shelves and do that song over again without the word kike in it. But these are the same people that financed gangster rap. When rap music first came out, it was not what it is today. It was not us calling each other niggas and bitches and hoes and talking about killing our own people. It was more lighthearted and fun, and it also had a lot of conscious rap. Okay. Those European Jewish people, they put a stop to that, okay, because they saw the positive effect that the positive music was having on our people. And I want to piggyback on something that was said earlier also about stop the hatred towards white people. For me, it's not about hating white people, okay? And someone said, let it go. But how can we let it go when it's still happening, okay? We're still being targeted every day. I'm a black man who has been targeted just for existing in my skin, being harassed by racist cops, being assaulted by racist cops, and being verbally assaulted walking down the street minding my business when a car full of white people driving by and yell the word nigga out of the car at me. So how are we supposed to let something go when they're not letting their behavior go? We have to still be smart enough to protect ourselves out here. And as far as doing something different, what we need to do different, it's to raise our children to stop seeking white acceptance, to stop trying to be a part of this system, and to teach our children to love the skin that they're in and respect other black people. Because I hear some black people say that, well, my parents taught me to grow up and love everybody, but that's not true. A lot of black parents do not make a specific effort to teach black children to love their own people. They teach black people, they teach their children to love white folks and everybody else. And the reason why I say that is because I see the difference in how black people treat white people and how we treat our own people. We will bend over backwards to forgive white people no matter what they do to us. We forgive white people if they kill our children, they kill our loved ones in cold blood, and before our loved ones are in the ground good, we're forgiving them for what they did. But when a black person does something to us, and it could be something minor, we hold a grudge against our own people for something very small. And you brought up the word passing on the baton. Something that I said a couple of years ago on a Zoom meeting with fellow theater folks. We have to stop passing on the baton of oppression to our children. And we need to start passing on the baton of empowerment and self-love in the Black community. We have to be very deliberate about teaching our children to love the skin they're in and to love one another and to look at each other with love. That's what we need to do differently. Like, pretty soon, Martin Luther King's birthday is, well, not his birthday, that's, well, yeah, his birthday is coming up. Yeah, the celebration of his birthday in January. And every year when that comes up, they only focus on that I Have a Dream speech. And they only focus on a couple of little lines from that speech. That whole part about I have a dream one day that little Black boys and little Black girls will join hands with little white boys and little white girls and all that, and judge not a man by the color of his skin, but by the content of his character. But that whole speech is 18 minutes long. He talked about more than just that. Also, Martin Luther King was not that I have a dream speech, Martin, when he was killed. He had changed. He also said to Harry Belafonte, I feared I led my people or integrated my people into a burning home, which says that he saw that integration was a mistake. But we keep preaching this I have a dream crap, having our children growing up thinking that's what Martin Luther King wanted. That was his main goal, was for us to join hands with white folks. He also talked, when he was killed, which I shared that speech on my wall several times, he was talking about reparations. He was about to go to D.C. to fight for reparations for Black people when he was killed. But Black folks don't want, a lot of Black folks don't want to talk about that. All they want to talk about is I have a dream. That I have a dream has become a nightmare. Okay, integration was not a great thing for us. Okay, it was not a great thing for us. Our people were better off before integration in a lot of ways because we had our own stuff. Okay, we had our in the Black neighborhood, every business pretty much was owned by Black people. Nowadays, you're hard pressed to find a business owned by a Black person in a Black neighborhood because most people, everybody but us, owns businesses in our neighborhood. Arabs and Asians, they're all up in our neighborhood. So what I would say we need to do differently is we have to be very deliberate to teach our children to love the skin at their end and to stop all this kumbaya bullshit because it's not getting us anywhere. It's not getting us anywhere.
Nah, brother. That's strong commentary, brother. You're right on point.
Give me one. I'm about finished. I know it's long. But see, we keep talking about not wanting to be divided. Well, some Black people talk about not wanting to be divided from other races, right? We got to work on being with other races, but there's division amongst our own people that we don't even pay attention to. We got to work on the division amongst our own people first before we can worry about making sure we connected to white folks. Kumbaya is not getting us anywhere. We have to be very deliberate to teach our children to love who they are and to love their skin, the skin at their end. You know, like this whole thing with representation, like with that Little Mermaid thing, that movie that's coming out. A lot of Black people are excited because they got a Black girl playing the Little Mermaid. But what is being represented in that film? What's being represented? You got a Black mermaid, but her love interest in that film is white, is a white man. Okay, so everybody's talking about this little Black girl being excited seeing themselves portrayed as a princess or whatever, a Little Mermaid. It's all great that little Black girls feel good about that, but what are they seeing when they go to this movie? They're going to see a Black princess or Black mermaid with a white man. It's not showing, and it's not showing little Black boys they could be a prince or a king, or because little Black boys need to grow up seeing, they need to grow up seeing images of Black men loving and respecting Black women and seeing Black people being loving towards each other in general, even if it's just friendship. Because most of the time when they portray us in these films, a lot of times it's dysfunctional stuff. Because our dysfunction in this community or in this society has been very profitable for other races, like what I was saying earlier about those European Jews, why they push for the gangster rap and everything. In short, well, I know I've already said a lot. So what I'm saying is that we need to focus on teaching our children to love the skin that they end and to look at other Black people with love and compassion. We don't all have to agree on everything because no one agrees with anybody 100% of the time. We all have disagreements, but we have to be able to look at each other and agree or agree to disagree and still have each other's back and be on code and be on code like other races, because other races have inner issues within their race, but they don't normally get out there and put all their issues on Front Street like we do. We argue about everything in public, and then we will even invite white people into the conversation and let them stick their mouths in it. Just one thing I want to say right quick. You remember when Tyrese, the singer, had posted something about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, something like that, when he was crying about his daughter, the singer Tyrese. He was crying about his daughter, and he had made a video crying about custody of his daughter or something like that. And black folks were berating him and calling him weak because he was a man, he was crying, because black men not supposed to show emotion.
Hmm.
Well, there was this white comedian, Gary Owen or somebody, some white man, he jumped and stuck his mouth in there and started calling Tyrese weak and mocking him for crying. And some black people applauded this white man, calling this black man weak. I don't like stuff like that. How are you going to let this white man get away with calling this brother weak?
Well, you know, like I say, they going to do what they do, but you know.
Well, yeah, but my thing is that black people let them do it. They didn't check them.
Yeah, I got you. Mm-hmm. All right, sir, so I'm going to try to get to some people else, but that was a very strong comment, and I appreciate you for that, sir, for being open honest. Ms. G, you got your hands raised. Can you unmute yourself?
How's it going, everybody?
Pretty good.
Great.
I just want to be brief. I think that the definition for what family is should be, you know, talked about more. What is a man? What is a woman? Not even the role, but what is a man? What is a woman? What is a boy? What is a girl? What is a wife? What is a husband? You know, like now we have this. I mean, most people have the basic idea of the Cosby family, right? Oh, that's the ideal image of a black family. But what is family? Everybody has their own different jurisdictions in their family and standards and things like that. But I understand, like, trying to identify what a family is supposed to look like. You know, what's the basic idea of what family is? I know everybody has their own ways of doing things. But for kids now, it's hard for them to identify with anything because it's an identity crisis, right? So that's just one thing, to define what these genders or roles or whatever it's supposed to be. I don't even know what word to call things now. But I wanted to give some inspiration. So the gentleman before talked about forgiveness or forgiving. And so I thought about something. A lot of people have stuff in their homes and stuff they're trying to get rid of nowadays and consolidating. And, you know, people have died and passed on and they have things that they're like, what do we do? Give it to Goodwill. Well, some people do still need stuff that we know, you know. So during these times of the holidays, while people are buying gifts and, you know, what you say, Thanksgiving, I kind of thought of something. Forgiving, right? Let's start off like this. Forgive somebody for something they did that you holding on to. Because most people that people be holding on to something, they don't even know they did something. And it might have been a mistake, or you never know. Like, they're like, oh, I didn't know that you were holding that against me and you took it wrong. See what I'm saying? A word, a gesture, anything. Something happens and we're like, oh gosh, you're holding on to something for so long. And then you go back and the person didn't even mean it. They may have, but still it's time to release. So we have stuff around our houses or whatever. We give something. There's not like tech. I mean, like you don't have to wrap it up or whatever. You want whatever. But like, hey, anybody need, you know, anybody, you have any things around your house that you need? Because some people still have things they need. Well, you need this. You need this. You see what I'm saying? So things that we hold on to, forgive. So instead of Thanksgiving, forgive and give. So the last thing I wanted to mention with the youth. I work with youth extensively. And it's a part of my calling. But I found out that what happens with youth, with the bridge, with the elders, and then which really they are the elders because they're the oldest seeds on the earth. But the elders haven't really talked about their lives enough. I think what they've done, and I'm an elder too. I mean, in my own, like with the people under the youth under me, but I'm in the middle. Like I'm an 80s baby, but I see that the younger people are used to being told what not to do or like what to do, like don't do this and don't do this. And you should, like, it's kind of like, somebody telling you something versus maybe showing you, sitting down, having the patience. And we're so misdirected and everybody's all over the place and here, there, watching TV and watching this. And the kids don't have that engagement in the home or like in the community, like really sitting down, let's talk, let's peel through some stuff, you know, have genuine conversations and share the sometimes darkness, the past does need to be exposed that they've done. Like, I had to go back into my own childhood and ask some questions. Like, Mom, what happened with this? And I had to ask you a few times, like, you need to tell me what happened so I can get my healing. I'm not going to, you know, judge you based on your mistakes, but I need to understand. Ain't nothing new under the sun. So just, I mean, I think that just storytelling, tell stories in the family. And maybe sometimes you don't even have to say exactly how it is, but just use it as a you know, reformulate it into another way where a kid can understand. And I think that is just bridging the gap is to allow kids to understand that we were kids once. You know what I mean? Even like elders now. Like my dad, I'm like, tell me some stuff. Show me how to operate without a phone. You know what I mean? So that's it. I think that's where the gap needs to be drawn in, is that realness of knowing that we were just kids once and the elders were kids once. So that's it.
I appreciate you for your commentary. But let me just say this to you. You know, forgiveness is a powerful tool. Because not only, like Mr. Murphy was saying, that not only does it heals you, and we do have to often renew our minds. You know, sometimes we need mental health. You got to deal with a lot of stuff. But, you know, you write about narratives, you know, because, like I say, when I was coming up, I came up in the 50s, and your parents would say stuff like this to us, you know, because I said so. You know, no explanation, because I said so, and you were not to question them. But it was more like the grandparents who would sit you down and say, child, well, if you do this, this would happen to you and stuff like this. And so, you know, that made more sense to me because when you just said, because I said so, maybe wanted to go out there and investigate it myself and, you know, and got in a lot of trouble because of it. And so, yes, we do have to communicate. That's why I keep suggesting that we do these documentaries to tell our stories. Because sometimes, like, see now, you know, out of my mother and father, them alone, it's about 80 or 90 of us now in that bracket. This is a lot of people came from just these two people. And now, like I said, I ran across my niece the other night, this Friday night. I haven't seen her in person about a couple of years now. And I've seen online some of the stuff you do. But like I told, and I told her before she left that, you know, I told her that, you know, I appreciated her. I told her that if I can help her in any way. And matter of fact, she and I have a kindred spirit because that's what she's trying to do, help our people. And it made me so proud to see that she cared. And she's doing it by herself, but I do know I could have assisted her. I could have gave her some advice. I know she had to bump her head doing a lot of things. And it's good to learn on your own, but you shouldn't have to if we can just, you know, bring some of that knowledge down to our people. So, again, Ms. G, thank you for your input. Now, and I'm going to move quickly along. Dr. McKenzie, how are you today, sir?
I'm good, Brother David. How are you?
I'm still here, sir. let me ask you this now, because you deal with books, and that's what he does in the National Black Unity News. That's what he does in his Purple Light. He helps people write books. He's an author himself. And I was telling people earlier that my father and my father's fathers and my great-grandfathers, you know, most of them didn't write books. Like most of them probably couldn't read, some of them, and because most of them didn't go to school because they was out there working, making a way for us. But some did. And like I said, it soothed me when I was going through my trauma. It was the autobiography to help me get through. And so, but when it comes to telling our stories through books, through newspaper, through media, how important that is to you? You know, I mean, why do you think that is so important that we do things? That's why you involve with stuff like this.
Well, I think first, when it comes to books, it's one of the most important ways that we're able to pass on our legacies. One of the things that I tell, you know, authors or, you know, potential clients is, you know, your book and your words will outlive you. When you're gone, And one of my mentors, Dr. Will Moreland, he says, long after I'm gone, you know, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, my great-great-great-grandchildren will be able to pick up the work that I've done and be able to say, wow, this is what great-great-great-granddaddy did, you know. And he laid the foundation. And here's the point, not just books. I'm going to give you all a quick example. I was watching on YouTube these brothers that have a YouTube channel called Earn Your Leisure. Right? Great brothers that talk about finance and understanding money and different things. And they've had different guests on there that talk about money and financing and how we build wealth as Black people. And they had a young brother on there, and he was talking, they were talking about building wealth through real estate and different things like, but he brought up the Rockefellers. And he talked about how, I believe it's John D. Rockefeller, that's the great, great grandfather that we're, everything kind of really popped off and started with. But he said he, Mr. Rockefeller, bought a life insurance policy on not only his children, but his grandchildren. And subsequently, each generation after that did the same thing. His kids bought policies on their children and their grandchildren. So it was the rule of 72, and I don't know everyone that's familiar with that, but it's the multiplication of money, it's the multiplication of interest, all of those things. And that's how they were able to build that Rockefeller wealth, putting that system in place as a family. And the Rockefellers, in essence, became their own bank because everything that they left to the next generation was multiplied. Each generation was multiplying what it was that was left. As a consequence, that's why the Rockefellers are who they are now. They're still reaping the benefits of what their great-great-grandfather did and put in place. And that's what books give us the ability to do. Our businesses give us the ability to do. That's what, as you mentioned, Brother David, what media gives us the ability to be able to do. The National Black Unity News will be here long after you. You talk about it all the time, how it will be in the archives. Anybody will be able to get it. Your great-great-grandchildren will be able to get and see what great-great-granddad did with this newspaper, with the newspaper that he had. So that's the importance of understanding what we do through books, what we do through telling the stories, as you've talked about here tonight. That's the importance of it and what it does to not only, you know, our families, but what it does to other children that are around us, you know, that are around and that are of that next generation that we get to pour into, you know, and that we get to talk to. And not only talk to, and I'll say this, they have to be willing to listen.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be willing to listen because the what you hear a lot of times is, and we did it too. I mean, let's admit it. You know, when we went out, because I always tell my buddy when we talk about stuff, I'm like, man, when we went out 20s, and I was telling my best friend the other night, I said, when we went out 20s and 30s, we thought we knew everything.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we look at it, in our 50s, we're like, we ain't know nothing. Absolutely nothing. But we the difference between some of us and others is we were willing to listen to those that came before us. So that we don't do, like you were talking about, bump our heads against the wall when it comes to everything. Yeah, we're going to have to bump our head against the wall with some things. But I don't have to put my hand on the stove when you tell me it's hot to know that it's hot. If you tell me it's hot, I need to listen to you and understand, hey, I don't need to go near that stove and understand that it's hot. And there are going to be repercussions to me touching a hot stove. But I have to be willing to listen to that and understand that the stove is hot. You know, real quick example, and then I'll be finished. I had to have an operation on both my eyes because I had to have my corneas replaced. This is about 10 years ago. So after I had the second operation and I'm healed and I'm moving along, progress and everything like that, I went to go with one of my follow-ups with my doctor. And so I asked him, I said, hey, Doc, I said, can I, you know, can I go and play basketball now? Because me and my buddy would go and we'd go out and play basketball and, you know, just exercise and stuff like that. And my doctor said to me, do you want to see? I was like, that's all I need to hear. He said, because if you were to hit, if just by accident, if I get hit in my eye, my temple, or anything like that, he said, I could be blind for the rest of my life. I was like, you ain't gonna say no more. I was like, I don't need to go out and play basketball. Oh, you don't know what you're talking about, Doc. I can go out, I can play basketball. I'm healed, I'm this, that, and the other. If I listened to him, which I did, you know, I understood what the consequences would be if I didn't listen to him and did what I wanted to do. And understanding that, and that's what we have to understand, too. We should always be learning. And I'll say that we should listen to learn, and then we have to learn to listen. I'll say that again. Listen to learn to listen and listen to learn. When we do that, we get information, we learn from that information, and then by learning to listen to those who may know more than what we do. You know, Brother David, you've been where I'm already trying to get to. So I know there's some things, there are a lot of things that you know that I don't need to know. Brother Dempsey, same thing. Y'all know about some things that I have yet to experience. I haven't been there. So it would behoove me to listen to you, to learn about those things, so I don't have to bump my head against the wall when it comes to certain things. Because I know y'all already know. Y'all have already bumped your head so that I don't have to.
That's right.
And then I, in turn, do the same thing. So to me, that's what this is all about. You know, and I know we talked a little bit about Brother Kyrie and Kanye, but Brother Kyrie, sometimes we have to be able to understand that he didn't put anything along with but a link. But that link was connected to something that he didn't really, I think, and the impact that it would have not only on him, but everybody else that was around him. So that's the importance of being able to listen and to learn and have people in your space that aren't afraid to tell you, you know what, Kanye, you need to go down somewhere, bro. You know, you need to go down, get the help you need, or you need to listen to somebody, you know, because you're not doing us as a people, you know, justice by doing this. You're causing more disruption than you are, you know, than order. So with that, Brother David, I'll give the mic back over to you. Thank you.
I appreciate that. You know, like I said, everybody has an opinion about this and about that. And one thing, you know, we're willing to share information. That's a powerful piece when you've been talking about the Rockefellers, about how generational wealth can be done. Just simple things like just taking our policies on each other. But, you know, but we have to, like I say, renew our minds because, you know, I tried to do that one time. And some of the feedback I got was kind of negative. Well, you trying to kill people off? You trying to profit off the dead? Well, you know, and all sorts of things. But see, that's why I say we have to renew our minds and we have to deal with all types of people. But in any case, moving right along, because time is important. But Brother Cliff, how are you tonight, sir?
Good evening, sir. Good evening, all of you. I'm just sitting back here enjoying the conversation.
Well, since you're enjoying the conversation, and you heard a lot of different things about this and that. But you have something that kind of can pull all of this together. Can you share a little bit on that?
Well, a lot of what people have shared here today actually comes from a number of different perspectives. We've heard people expressing a lot of things from the economic angle. We've heard people expressing things from the spiritual angle, from the personal family angle, from the cultural and arts angle. And of course, yourself and Baba Dempsey Murphy from the media angle. And part of the issue I think that we have as a people is that we're not consulting each other sufficiently. We're not listening to all aspects of our existence. We like to use the word holistic, but holistic basically means that you take in all of the different aspects of your health, of your community, of your knowledge base, and you bring them all together into an organic whole. So to concentrate on one at the expense of the others is to leave yourself with incomplete knowledge and incomplete information. So a lot of the times we wind up going by the assumptions that are left there for us, sometimes by our enemies. There's a quote of Mark Twain. It says, what gets us into trouble isn't stuff that we don't know. It's what we know for sure that just ain't so. And one example of that, in my personal opinion, is and not always, is at the moment, is Kanye West. Kanye has a lot of really strong opinions that he's had no hesitation in voicing. Slavery was a choice, was one of the biggies. And yet this is an individual who also has almost bragged about having never read a book in his life. Now, I don't know whether that's true that he's never read a book in his life. I kind of find that hard to believe. But the idea that you would almost publicly tout that level of ignorance, but then he was a big follower of Donald Trump, who also touted his own ignorance. So there's a situation there where Kanye will come out and he'll say something that will cause a lot of trouble sometimes. And then in this last instance, he caused himself some trouble. As far as Kyrie Irving is concerned, now he's someone who holds a lot of strong opinions on things, but I have to agree with pretty much everyone who's spoken here before. Kyrie tweeted or he posted a movie or a documentary that he saw on Amazon. First of all, nobody's going after Jeff Bezos for putting it up on Amazon. They're going after Kyrie Irving because he simply put up a Facebook post where he said, hey, I checked out this movie and it's interesting. So everyone's going after him. Whereas Dave Chappelle said this past Saturday, Kanye West got in so much trouble that Kyrie Irving got in trouble. And it was almost like Kyrie got in trouble by association almost with big, because Kanye West said something that got Kyrie in trouble. So and to me, a lot of that comes from really decades of cultural, I'll say cultural malformation over the last several decades. What has happened? Your news departments at your networks have been decimated. Your investigative reporting has been almost completely wiped out. And so as a result, journalism is much more opinion journalism, even if it's opinions we agree with, or it's tabloid journalism. There's not much vetting or real checking of facts that goes on. The fact checking occurs after the misinformation or disinformation has already hit the airwaves. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, you have a whole lot of people running around. You have Trump running around talking about stop the steal, when he should know for a fact that even in 2016, when he quote unquote won the presidency, he actually lost a popular vote by 3 million. So who really stole something there? Point is that there is a lack of sufficient commitment to the knowledge of our elders, the knowledge of our jagnas. Some people call them mentors, but a lot of people have an objection to that word, so they use jagmas instead. The knowledge of our historians. And so as a result, we think of Dr. King and we think of, quote unquote, the I Have a Dream speech. And he never called it the I Have a Dream speech. He wasn't even going to talk about that until, I believe, Mahalia Jackson from the audience said, Martin, tell him about your dream. He wasn't even going to go there. Dr. King said more about military, the right wing, and capitalism combining to essentially cause this three-headed monster who's going to eat up essentially society in the United States, that a government that spent more on military than on social uplift was approaching spiritual death. He talked more about 400 years of unpaid labor and accumulated interest, which was an argument really for reparations, than he did about this whole I Have a Dream content of the character as opposed to color of the skin. Similarly with Malcolm, they say, well, Malcolm's whole thing was he wouldn't take any stuff off the white man. But they didn't say, they don't say anything about Malcolm saying that black people have to essentially be ready to take Uncle Sam in front of the world and show the world what Uncle Sam has done to black people. They don't go there. When they talk about Marcus, even talking about Marcus Mosiah Garvey, Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, the quote that most of us use is, up you mighty race, you can accomplish what you will. Some people say, look for me in the whirlwind. Very few people use what I consider to be the most important quote of Marcus Garvey. The thing to do is to get organized. Keep separated and you will be exploited. You will be robbed. You will be killed. Get organized and you compel the world to respect you. To me, that's the most important quote from the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. But very few people know that quote from him because we're too busy concentrating on the other easy sound bites. And so as a result, we reduce all of these people from our history, our heroes, our leaders. We reduce them to a sound bite that doesn't actually give us an instruction about what to do. Marcus Mosiah Garvey gave us an instruction about what we have to do. And Dr. King gave us instructions about what we have to do. And Malcolm X gave us instructions about what we have to do. But the things we remember about them are not the instructions, not the things that should motivate and mobilize us to actually come together and organize in a constructive, positive way. But they're the easy soundbite slogans that we can just throw up there in the air, and we don't have to worry about whether or not we're living up to what they said, because what we're remembering them for is not actually a marching order. So I tend to think more along the lines of what marching orders did they have for us. It's just like people who want to argue about whether Yeshua was a man or a god, whether he walked on water or not, whether he turned water into wine or not. Everyone gets into these arguments over his nature. Was he man or was he God? And you rarely hear people talking about it in terms of, well, wait a minute, what was it that he commanded humankind to do? And why aren't we doing it? And to me, that's the most important thing. So basically, I guess the organizing emphasis for me is to attempt to, in some small way, follow through on some of those marching orders. So it's one of the reasons why I'm happy to hear the different perspectives that come out here, because while that's happening, I'm thinking about, okay, well, how can we bring all those different perspectives together? You and I were at the event at our social club on Friday. And of course, we saw your niece with the excellent, wonderful film that she had produced. And we also saw the brothers from Dads United who were there. And from then until now, and past now even, I'm thinking about, okay, how can we bring them in and to try to work with them on some real positive, some positive organizing efforts to start to bring the community together by first bringing the activists together and creating that example for the community to follow. Because as far as I'm concerned, the community is not going to come together until the people that they recognize as activists and leaders come together first and show them this is how you do it. With apologies to Montel Jordan. But to give them that positive example to follow. Because if we tell them, well, you're not together, they'll just look at us and say, well, y'all not together. Y'all not coming together. Y'all not unifying. Y'all are busy biting each other. You're taking on each other, insulting each other, criticizing each other because that person's into the economy and that person's into the spirituality and that person's in the culture and that person's a wild-eyed revolutionary. Y'all not coming together, so why should we? So my take right now is that we need to do it, first of all, so we can develop some comprehensive plans so that we can deal with all of the attacks that are coming at us from all sides by defending ourselves and fighting back on all sides. And then also to, once we have established that, to put that image of Pan-African unity on the organizational level out there for the people to see, for the people to be inspired by, and for the people to follow.
Okay, I appreciate that, sir. As always, you know, can you explain, you know, you I know you probably haven't may determine what date and time, but let people know what's about to come up.
Okay, even though I've talked for far longer than I intended. Right now, the intention, the plan is for us to have the next Zoom meeting of what I've been calling the Maryland Pan-African Cooperative Coalition on more than likely the last Wednesday in November, which would be November 30th. And I don't want to necessarily creep into December, because now we're getting too close to Kwanzaa and to Christmas and for all the other holidays that people celebrate. So ideally, I'll want to be able to announce maybe in the next week or so that our next meeting of the Cooperative Coalition will be on November 30th. And hopefully we'll have some updates on at least moving forward a little bit with the cooperative community education thing, between the rites of passage that groups like the Egbe are doing, and the Egbe is also working with the Squeegee workers, and what a lot of the independent community and African-centered educational projects from PLM's Watoto Development Center and Urban Youth Initiative Project in Kamoya Africana Shule, the Brother Nailon Butler's Different Kind of Smart, to Roots of Scouting's work, and he's also in Roots of Scouting, to efforts by the Sankofa Children's Museum, and Great Blacks and Wax wants to get involved in these kinds of things too. And then there's also Dr. Sanada Kamara down in Washington, D.C., who has an interest in getting involved in something like this. And we've got another number of other people who have called in to the Zoom call, and they have expressed an interest in either getting involved with or supporting in some way this particular effort moving forward. And my hope is that we'll at least have some updates with regard to that, or at least some more voices on the Zoom call that can kind of get involved in this conversation, and then we can set up a standalone meeting just for that one thing, where we can start really putting in place, okay, how are we gonna get this thing together so it can be up and running maybe sometime in 2023. And maybe even there's some, I don't even know what people are planning for Kwanzaa, but there may even be some at least announcements about what's going on in Kwanzaa, or maybe even some proposals to put on some kind of a cooperative Kwanzaa event. So there are those things. There are a couple other proposals that people are working on. There's a mutual defense pact that one member of the group is talking about. He hasn't shared all the details yet. He shared some of them with me, but we'll see how that goes along. When he's ready to actually get down and talk about it in detail, we'll talk about that too. But right now we're looking at Wednesday, November 30th at 7 p.m. And like I said, I'll be sending out an email about it probably in the next week, and then the Zoom link when we nail it down will be coming shortly after that.
All right, I appreciate that. And as soon as you get, you know, I'm posted out there, and I encourage everybody to participate in this, because this is how we have a united front. We can, you know, collectively bring all our resources together so that, you know, you can still do what you do, but, you know, collectively we can do what we do. So I appreciate you, brother. Now, in closing, you know, it's a lot of great information that came across tonight, as always. And tomorrow night we will be here again on a different program, where Kathleen Murphy will be the host. And it's more about the National Black Unity News newspaper and the editors involved. And I think we have Joy Ford, one of our publishers, authors, will be our guest tomorrow. So I encourage you to be on at 7:30. Now, we can already shut it down, but there's a couple of people, if they'd like to share before we shut it down, that's Neil Spencer and Brother Rico Crowley. Mr. Neil Spencer, would you like to share, or you got anything you want to let people know what's going on? Well, Mr. Neil Spencer is from out of Texas, I believe. Yeah, Texas. And he's bringing forth black businesses in that area to have a network, and so I appreciate him for that. And you know, and also Brother Rico Crowley, would you like to share? And if not, you know, I can say a little bit about this brother.
Brother David, good evening, everyone. Hey, look, all I would want to say is hello to everybody. That's about it, man.
Okay. All right, and I'm going to share a little bit about this brother because it's important, especially this time of the year, any time of the year, but especially this time. This is when people go through a lot of trauma and drama. This is where, you know, so many things happen to people because of, like we were talking about earlier, what happened yesterday. And sometimes this year, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Kwanzaa brings a lot of, not joy to everybody, but a lot of hurt and pain to people. But nevertheless, we always have, people out there who are going through difficult times, sometimes no fault of their own. And I'm trying to turn this thing off while it's running. But in any case, Brother Rico, he helps the homeless, the needy, those who are having difficult times. And he's a soldier on the front line. And I appreciate you, Brother Rico, because he runs an organization called God's Giving Hands. And it's a powerful organization. I got to add firsthand knowledge of how they work and how they serve people and how they help people. So thank you, brother. But, you know, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate everybody for participating in this podcast tonight. And like I say, you know, words do not come back void. You never know who's listening in on Blog Talk Live. The Brother Satire is running. We're on Facebook Live and other formats. And also, we run an ad in other formats after this thing because it's recorded. And again, we want to thank you all for participation. And this is what I'm going to suggest to you because this is serious times. Next week, bring somebody, you know, share. But, you know, you've got to be very careful who you share this link with because, like you said, you know, that's why we don't put it out there publicly. It is because, you know, we have been with what they call bombs. That means people are aware of us now, and if they can get into this meeting, they will, and they will try their best to disrupt it because we're sharing information that can uplift the people, and a lot of people don't want that to happen. But in any case, that's why you don't see a large group of people on here because, like I said, we don't send it out to that many people. But in any case, your input is valuable. The service that you have already put is extremely valuable, and I appreciate you. And I'm gonna make an appeal. I just put out a video today. Just send it out. Just finished it just before this call. I'm encouraging people to do podcasting. I'm encouraging people to do documentaries. I'm encouraging people to subscribe in the National Black Unity News. And I started this thing off with help me to help you so that we can help ourselves. I need help. You need help. We need help. And we can help each other.